Welcome to Parents Perspective.
The great thing about kids is that they're always going to give you something to laugh at. A friend of mine recently told me that mom and dad were both dealing with the problem of their four-year-old coming into their bed at night. They were trying to get him to stop this, but he just had the habit. They had started earlier and he couldn't get rid of the habit. So the dad had to go on a business trip for about 3 or 4 days. So he said to his son, listen, now I'm going to be gone for a few days. While I'm gone, I want you to really try hard to not go into mommy's bed while I'm gone. And so the son agreed, well, unless you have a bad dream, then it's okay. It's if you're really scared or something. So the guy gets back from his trip, and the mom and the two kids meet him at the airport. And when the son saw the dad, he ran up and said, "Dad, Dad, good news. Nobody slept with mom while you were gone."
And with that wonderful introduction, we are going to talk today about humor in our families. I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest has created what he terms the laughter remedy and was truly a pioneer in humor research. Dr. Paul E. McGee laid the groundwork for the current interest in the health benefits of humor. A developmental psychologist, he's internationally known for his own humor research and has published a number of articles and books on humor. These include Health, Healing, and the Amuse System, Understanding and Promoting the Development of Children's Humor, and Stumblebees and Pelophones, How to Develop a Powerful Verbal Sense of Humor. He offers programs on humor and health and stress management to corporations, hospitals, and other organizations interested in learning more about the benefits of humor and how to build them into your life. He's the father of two young children. We're so glad you came back to visit us at Parents Perspective, Dr. McGee.
Thanks. I'm delighted to be here.
One of your books really deals with the developing of a child's sense of humor. How do you see that continuum work?
Well, actually, as it turns out, every kid has a unique sense of humor, just as adults do. But it's also the case that it doesn't matter where you go in the world, there are certain ways in which all kids have the same sense of humor. There are basic developmental changes. And the book Understanding and Promoting the Development of Children's Humor is really designed to talk about that. And for example, in the question, well, when does humor start? I mean, my 2-month-old laughs, is that humor? And in my view, it's not really humor until, because humor is mental play, it's intellectual play with ideas. And we know that you can actually get kids laughing, like bouncing them on your knee, and anything that sort of physiologically arouses a child can trigger laughter in a safe environment in the presence of a parent or attachment object. And in short, I don't think that's necessarily laughter. We do raspberries. Certainly mm-hmm. that causes laughter. Adults also laugh, sometimes when they're nervous and tense. Like you laugh on a roller coaster going down. It's a way of letting go of tension.
I don't do that.
You don't laugh. You scream.
Some people don't go on them.
I think the earliest humor shows up by the second half of the first year of life, when parents do things like we make silly faces or your listeners can imagine what I'm doing there.
That's pretty funny, everybody.
So I think anything that the parent does that's out of the ordinary, a mother I know with her infant who was like 8 months, she was bottle feeding the infant, and the baby seemed to have trouble getting, stuff out of the bottle, and it looked like it was clogged. So the mother, she wasn't trying to be funny, she just picked the bottle and put it in her own mouth, and she started sucking on the bottle, and within a second, there was, first of all, a look of surprise in the infant, and then this big grin, and a chuckle, which came out of the infant. So I think that's a good example of humor. It's unexpected, incongruous things that the parent, the well-learned attachment figure is doing. And then once kids start to be able to pretend, early in the second year, pretend starts, then treating an object as another object, is funny. So, I have a pencil in front of me, so I could, I'm brushing my teeth with it, it's funny. But it can just be in the service of pretend. So when the emphasis is on the absurdity of doing something it's not supposed to do, that can be humor. Once kids learn language and start naming things, they do the predictable thing, and that is they call things by the wrong name. As conceptual development starts in the preschool years, they find it funny to turn concepts on their ear. So Sesame Street is very good at taking advantage of this. Kids are able to understand riddles at about the age of six, you know, or seven. But they start telling them beforehand because they hear other people asking a question and giving an answer. So a five-year-old might say something like, what did the cat say to the mouse? I'm going to eat you up! And really laugh, you know.
Don't take that on the
laughter.
I mean, there's no, they don't understand the wordplay. My book, Stumblebees and Pelophones, is full of riddles with a key part of the punchline missing. And it's really designed for kids at the age of six, you know, through junior high. And it gives, there's three clues to get them thinking in the right direction. And it's designed to build kids' skills at playing with language without giving them the answer. So, for example, I just opened the book, and here's an early one. What happens to little canoes when they're bad? They get... Any answers?
See, give me some hints, could you?
See, it's not even though it's kids' humor, it's not so easy for adults. So it's a kind of spanking.
They get our technician knows.
Our technician says paddle. So the second clue is find another word for or. How do skunks say grace before their meals? Let us...
Spray.
So you don't need a clue for that one. Yeah.
Let us pray.
And so the clues will be
intellectually 6 years old. There you
what do many families do before they eat? Another word for a fine mist. So it's a way of building the child's skill at playing with language at the point where they're already excited. Because kids memorize riddles and they don't necessarily get better at it without something like this.
What do you do about bathroom language, which makes its debut usually right around that same time?
Yeah.
And kids call each other poo-poo head and they think it's the funniest thing they've ever said.
And it's another kind. There's the kind of humor that I've been focusing on is sort of based on violation of your understanding of the world. It's built in for kids to enjoy doing that. But there's another separate dynamic going on with humor, which starts, you know, as soon as kids are starting to learn to try to control their bowels. Potty humor, you know, caca, pee pee. just saying the word is funny. And by the time kids, you know, get older, then they become more sophisticated. But adults, I think, have the same kind of thing. You know, the fact that the reason kids, according to Freud, you know, a long time ago, Freud said it's because we have this emotional stuff that's caught up in this, and it's not like other categories. So we need to sort of let go of the emotional tension just by saying the words. But even, you know, later on, we laugh at sexual humor. If you have a boss who's really nasty towards you and you have your own emotional stuff about this boss, someone tells a joke putting down the boss, it's much funnier because it's the boss than it would be if it were someone you have no connection with. It's the same kind of dynamic. It's a release of this emotional stuff. So I think the thing for parents to remember is this too will pass. And then they'll move on to something else that annoys you.
I was going to say, it morphs into some other jokes that the kids use. We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on humor for your health.
Washington, D.C. with Kids, an excellent book by authors Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Dr. Paul McGee about humor for your health.
Dr. McGee, are there any other physical benefits from humor?
There are two or three other areas that are pretty well researched. We've talked about the fact that humor and laughter reduce pain. There's also a great deal of evidence now showing that humor, I say humor and laughter because we don't know how much of it is due to the mental, emotional expression of humor, how much due to the act of laughing, they go together, has a significant immuno-enhancement effect. It strengthens the immune system. There's 30-some studies now showing that laughter strengthens different components of the immune system. And that's really exciting because we've known for decades that negative emotion, chronic negative emotion, has a suppressive effect on the immune system. And as you get older, like some of my friends are older.
Here and there.
Yeah. And, you know, like your immune system doesn't work as efficiently, you know, as it used to. And so especially, you know, once you hit those 50s and 60s years and on up, anything you can do to help bolster your immune system, you know, is a good thing to have going for you. So there's plenty of evidence in that direction. The other thing that's newer and pretty exciting is cardiac benefits. You can tell if you next time you have a let-go belly laugh, just pay attention to what your heart is doing. You'll notice that your heart rate is up. If you laugh for, 8, 9, 10, 12 seconds, you'll notice your heart rate is really sort of beating away. So it's a good form of cardiac exercise.
Hey, does that mean that we don't have to do the treadmill anymore? Yeah. Good laughs?
Well, it may mean that for you. There's a couple of things that are exciting that come out recently. And there's a couple of studies actually done in Maryland, by a physician there, over the last few years that are exciting. And the bottom line is that there's part of your lining, the inner lining of arteries, is called the endothelium. And he's got evidence now showing that there's a dilation of this inner lining of arteries that occurs in response to humor and laughter. And so what that means is that increased blood flow and reduced blood pressure. And when we're under stress, there's a constriction of those arteries. Know about the anger, like the coronary prone personality, connection with anger and hostility. Well, now here's one of the mechanisms that are going on. And people who have this sort of, getting angry, not and coming out angry, it's well, these blood vessels sort of, there's limits in terms of, how often they can expand, contract, and they're going through all these extreme contraction and dilation processes, and there's a gradual breakdown, and that sort of then opens them up to this atherosclerotic plaque that we all hear about. So anything that in the long run helps keep blood vessels dilated, is a step in the right direction. So there's evidence now that humor and laughter do that. That's exciting. And it makes sense out of a study that was published 4 or 5 years ago, in short, showing that if people have already had a heart attack, a myocardial infarction, they were randomly assigned half of them while they went into their standard cardiac rehab program over a year. It was 3 times a week. Half of them watched a comedy video, and they got to choose the video, so they would choose something that was funny to them. At the end of 1 year, the group that had been watching comedy videos 3 times a week during their cardiac rehab program, during that year they had significantly fewer recurrent heart attacks, significantly fewer episodes of cardiac arrhythmia, and at the end of that year they had significantly lower blood pressure than the group that didn't watch the videos. So there's evidence even for people who've already had heart attacks that in terms of blood pressure, a steady diet, building humor into your life actually has a cardiac benefit for them.
Did they
as well.
All want to be comedy screenwriters when they were young?
They should have. And a final thing that I just want to say, we all know that laughter makes us feel good. And finally, we're starting to understand why that is. And there's evidence using what's called a functional MRI. Basically, it's a new procedure that allows you to see which areas of the brain are active, engaged during a particular mental or other activity. And during humor, the same areas of the brain that are responding, that are activated in response to cocaine and methamphetamine, are activated in response to humor. So, that's exciting.
Humor's a lot cheaper.
Humor's cheaper. It's better for you. So, it's called the mesolimbic dopaminergic reward system. It's a mouthful, but it's basically humor activates reward centers that are very old in terms of an evolutionary sense, so that feel-good thing we get, it's a way of getting that feeling, without getting hooked on drugs. If you're someone who's prone to getting high, then you can get high on laughter, and it's much better for you in the long run.
We haven't talked much about the mental health side of this, but I think we should.
Right. And actually, there's a connection. I don't know if I mentioned this earlier or not, but called psychoneuroimmunology, PNI. And basically, it's looking at mind-body relationships in a new way. So we now know that it's important for your physical health to find tools for managing the stress that comes up in your relationship with your kids, on your job, and they tend to multiply. It escalates. And unless you have tools for managing this, it'll catch up with you in terms of negative impact on health. There's something going on in corporate settings. It's a kind of movement. There's a lot of interest in emotional intelligence, and there's no agreement on how to define emotional intelligence, but there is agreement on the notion that one key part of it is the ability to manage your own emotions and the emotions of others. That's crucial. And we know that humor is a powerful tool for doing that, especially anger. It's a more permanent fix with anger. With anxiety, you know, and it's a more of a temporary fix. So if you're someone who's prone to being angry, you can pull yourself up by your emotional bootstraps, you know, using humor. And so I think it's especially helpful for parents to know that it's an effective tool with your kids. With younger kids especially, you can very quickly pull kids out of their tantrums, their negative emotional state, by getting them to laugh. When my son Zachary was two, he was a colicky infant. We knew he had allergies, we eventually discovered, so we all had a lot of trouble with him. He would not let me change his diaper. He refused, and so I had his pants off, and I turned over, and while he wasn't looking, I put the pants on my head, and then I turned over. There was nothing in them. No, it was all in the diaper. But it was interesting. His tantrum at the moment, you know, was in a matter of seconds pulled through. Actually, even at two, initially he looked away. He didn't want to be tempted. A grin started to show up, and then after 2 seconds, you know, he had a little chuckle, and he said, again.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on humor for your health.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $10 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Dr. Paul McGee about humor for your health.
I remember when my oldest one was very little and he learned how to tell what to him was a joke. I can't remember what it was. It was a long time ago. Whatever it was, it had the desired effect on the adults around. Right. Everybody thought it was hilarious. So he told it again. And they thought it was funny. He told it a third time. They weren't laughing so much. So.
Right.
He learned something about telling jokes.
That's the thing with kids. I mean, they have no limits. From their point of view, it's just as funny the 427th time.
Right.
So in terms of supporting kids' sense of humor, I think it's important to really react positively to them. Let them know that you enjoy, you know, their efforts at humor. But still establish limits. Otherwise, they'll drive you nuts.
Mm-hmm. If you could change anything, Dr. McGee, about how our society operates, what would that be?
I would oblige everybody to somehow immerse themselves in humor. You see, you can't package this, really.
No, you can't.
You can't put it in a vitamin.
The funny nose and the glasses and the mustache. Darn it.
We went to a birthday party where someone did. As you came in the door, that's what you received.
See, maybe here's a way of looking at it. When I was younger, I worked in a factory. We had to literally put in a card, you know, punch a time clock. Mm-hmm. And I would say before you are allowed to start work, you have to report in with some kind of funny observation, something that happened since you left yesterday or maybe on the way this morning. You know, I was recently doing a program and this is in my car. Things can happen in your car. By the way, put a reminder in your car. All right, what's funny about this? You know, just to build a habit. I was going to do a program. Actually, it was near LaGuardia Airport. I was driving. There's a traffic circle in the hotel I was going to, and I had to hit my brakes because there was a guy in the circle backing up.
Wonderful.
He missed his turn.
He was probably from the southern hemisphere.
Redneck. I never thought of that. So he missed his turn, so he was backing up so he could. But it's a circle, right?
I mean, keep going.
I was so amazed at this. I drove around three times myself watching people's reactions. And in New York, you know, the reaction was not humor. You can imagine there was
the horns.
The horns
and the fingers.
And one finger, you know, which appeared. So, you know, to me, it was absurd. Or listening to the radio. I used to live in North Jersey. So New York was my station. I was listening to the station while driving somewhere. And there was a report of a guy who had been mugged. He and his wife, you know, were robbed. And they took the guy's wallet and some jewelry that the woman was wearing. And the guy had a nice leather coat. They took his coat. In the guy's wallet was a ticket for a New York Mets baseball game. It was the next day. There were good seats, you know, right along the third baseline, pretty close. And so just on a hunch, I mean, the guy knew where the seats were. So just on a hunch, he told the police about it. They waited till like the third inning, you know, and they went down. There were two muggers. You know, one of the guys was sitting in his seat and he was wearing his coat. So, I mean,
probably carrying his wallet.
So the absurdity of that. So there's always opportunities. It doesn't have to be break you up laughing kind of stuff. In New Jersey, we had a state inspection. And my car was
not funny.
Not funny, usually. And especially because it's a long wait. It was in the summer, like an hour wait. There was this woman in front of me who, it was like July, and she had her window open. A wasp or some kind of bee flew into her open window. It landed right under the rear view mirror. You could see she was moving around. She was panicking, and she took her shoe off. I think it had a sort of a pointy but solid heel. She went smack against, and the window just, I mean, it didn't shatter, but it cracked. Right. You know, from that point, she hit it so hard, it just sort of cracked and streaks going up. So the funny part was that she was the next in line. So she had gone up this little hill. She couldn't back out anymore. She couldn't. So the funny part was the reaction of these guys. So she pulled up, and they're just, and if you can imagine my look, and sort of staring at her in disbelief. You think you're going to pass inspection with that? You know?
Oh, dear.
The timing was not so good. Remember when Southwest Airlines first began, and every employee who was applying for a job there had to have a joke to tell during the interview? I thought that was wonderful.
In fact, Southwest, it's no coincidence that Southwest is generally, not always, but over the last 10, 15 years, I think it's Fortune magazine puts out like the top 100 companies to work for. But Southwest is generally up there right among the top. And I've used to live in Texas, and I've flown Southwest a lot. And I talk to people, you know, and this is a company that has fun built into their philosophy. Mm-hmm. Herb Kelleher, the CEO, you know, said that, well, we hire for attitudes. You know, we can teach them the basic skills and information they need to do the job, but it's pretty hard to teach them this basic sense of fun. So they want competent, professional people who know how to have fun at what they do. And it spreads out to customers. People do whatever it takes to handle the problem. And if you're a customer, you want someone who puts you number one and looks like they enjoy what they're doing.
Well, we have certainly enjoyed having you with us, and we wanted to get, before we left, anything that you feel that our listeners could use as a resource to continue learning about humor.
There's an organization called, it's AATH, it's the Association for Applied and Therapeutic Humor, and it's been in existence for probably about 15 years or so. It used to be mainly nurses and healthcare professionals. Now it's broadened to people in general, and they have a meeting every year, but the website is full of tons of resources, articles. There's a connection to other websites, listing of books related to humor, and so rather than list a lot of them, you know, people can go in a lot of directions with this. So it's aath.org.
And your website, Paul?
And my own website talks about the basic research also on humor and health. There's articles on humor in the workplace and on children's humor and parenting issues. And that's www.laughterremedy.com. Put both R's in the middle. Just run laughter and remedy together.
Well, this has been a wonderful remedy for us. We have had a fabulous time interviewing you, Dr. Paul McGee. So thanks so much for being with us
today. It's been a pleasure.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of one of Dr. McGee's books, Stumblebees and Pelophones, or Understanding and Promoting the Development of Children's Humor. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address, and please spell anything that's not obvious. That's very helpful to us. Mention show number 298 and tell us what station you're listening to if you can. Since we air all over the world, it's always fun to know where you're tuning in. Our latest book, Washington, D.C. with Kids, is available in all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about Parents Perspective, visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org. At the site,
You can even hear a show at any time. Just scroll down to the topic or guest of your choice and click onto the words Listen to Podcast below. This is Sandy Bird and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share parents' perspective. Today's program was made possible with generous support from the SF Foundation. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.